Belgium has been without a government since the elections of this past June. Joining me now for today's Underreported to explain why and what this means for the ethnically divided country is Lane Green, who writes for The Economist magazine. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me.
What does it mean that Belgium is without a government and for nearly half a year now?
Well, it's actually the fact that they've just passed the longest period without a government. In fact, Belgium has so many parties and is linguistically divided between the Flemings in the south and the Walloons in the south and the Flemings in the north, that it always takes a very long time to form a government. They only recently passed the longest time ever, which is about 150 days, but now they're coming up on the six-month mark. So it's been 6 months with only a caretaker government. That is the last government.
So the previous government has just remained in place.
Yes, they're running the ministries and taking care of the country, but they can't take any new political initiatives or anything like that because they don't have a mandate to do so.
Mm-hmm. And that means that the prime minister really is quite weakened.
He's completely weakened politically. Like I say, they are only really taking care of the shop until the new government comes in.
Well, what kind of an impact does that have on the general health of a country?
Well, it's starting to show impacts on the economy. You're starting to see the stock market and other economic indicators react because Belgium, like most of the European countries, needs various economic reforms, and they need a government with a mandate and political weight to come in and take care of those things.
And as you said earlier, this is not the first time this sort of thing has happened. So the Belgians kind of used to this sort of crisis?
They're used to it, but they're getting more nervous than they ever have been in the past. The leader of the party that won the elections, the sort of prime minister designate, is a Fleming from the north, a Dutch speaker. And he said during the campaign that Belgium was an accident of history and that the only thing that unified the country were the king, the soccer team, and a few brands of beer. So with the record being broken for the longest time without ever having a government, people are starting to take this a little more seriously than in the past. And certain people have started to talk more seriously about whether or not Belgium actually has a future as a country. And in fact, my magazine, The Economist, called for Belgium to be finally broken up in an editorial a few months ago.
But when you call Belgium an accident of history, you're talking about a country that goes back, at least its roots, to the 16th century.
Right, but the state of Belgium actually really only goes back to 1830 when it was created by the French and the British as a sort of neutral buffer state there in the heart of Europe. Belgium's culture goes back far farther. We think of people like Bruegel and so forth, but most of that history is really Flemish, the history of Flanders, and that's where a lot of Belgium's cultural identity comes from. As a modern country, Belgium is only about 175 years old, and so it doesn't have the weight of history like a France does or a Germany does to hold it together.
Well, Germany isn't all that much older, and neither is Italy.
Well, Germany and Italy as nation states are actually younger. They were both created in the 1860s and 70s. But the thing is that they were created by Germans and Italians who for a long time had been clamoring for a state that would represent the German spirit, that would represent Italians. Whereas Belgium was largely created by outsiders. And the thing is, while there are identifiable Germans and Italians, the joke is that in Belgium, there's no such thing as a Belgian. The only Belgians are the royal family. They say the royal family, the soccer team, and the Jews.
Well, let's cover those. Maybe we don't have to spend much time on the soccer team. But what about the king? Does he have any power? Or is he a symbol of this unification?
He is something of a symbol, but he's not as popular as his predecessor, and so there's no reason to hold the country together just for the king. He doesn't have the kind of loyalty that would by itself hold the country together.
Is this a similar monarchy to Britain's?
Most of the families in Europe are related to one another. So, yes, it goes back a long time in history.
I'm talking about the parliamentary approach with the king and, in Britain's case, the
queen.
Sure.
Yes, it's a constitutional monarchy. All the real power lies in the parliament. But the problem is the parliament can't give a majority to a government. They're trying to cobble together a government of about six parties right now, and it's become very difficult to do that because there are about 10 that won seats in the elections. The problem in Belgium is that every single party is divided between the language groups. So the Socialist Party has a French Socialist Party and a Dutch-speaking Socialist Party, and the same with the Christian Democrats and the same with the Social Democrats. And so it's very hard to get a coalition together.
So this is even more complicated than the situation in Quebec?
Far more complicated because Quebec really has two big parties and then a Quebec Nationalist Party. We're talking about three major parties, each of which are split into two parts. And then on the French side, there's a Nationalist Party. And on the Dutch side, there's a Nationalist Party that wants independence. And the statistic that's getting people worried is that almost half of the Flemings, the Dutch speakers, are saying they no longer want to be part of a Belgium. They want an independent Flanders.
But in a country like this, there has to have been so much intermarriage. There has to have been so much cooperation. Companies have to be made up of people from every group. It's hard to imagine that after all these years, people would want to suddenly mess it all up.
Well, there's not as much intermarriage as you would think. The groups are really quite separate, and language is the single prickliest aspect. For the longest time, of course, French, being an international language, being a language of culture, was dominant, and the Dutch speakers felt very, very looked down upon.
Even though they were
about half and half. Now there are actually more Dutch speakers, but the biggest thing is economic. The Dutch region is now actually much richer and much more vibrant, so the Dutch kind of feel like they should go their own way. They feel like the Francophone region is actually a bit of a drag on their economy.
Aren't there also German speakers in the country? Have they allied themselves with one of these competing factions?
Yes, just to make the picture a little more complicated, German is the third official language. The Germans are concentrated in the East. They are mainly looking for linguistic autonomy in their region, but they're not permanently allied really with either group.
Is Belgium officially bilingual? Are both languages taught in the schools?
Belgium is officially trilingual, and you'll see pretty much every sign in the country, and especially in Brussels, will be written in French and Dutch at very least, and a lot of them are written in German as well. And because of all of the international institutions based in Brussels, NATO is based there, and the European Union is based there, almost everyone speaks English as well, so it's one of the greatest sort of linguistic melting pots you'll see in the world. But as soon as you leave Brussels and go into the Flanders region, you'll find that speaking French gets you a very frosty response.
Well, Brussels is a complicated situation as well, isn't it? It's an international city, as you point out. The headquarters of the EU and NATO are both there. But it's also a French-speaking city within a Flemish region.
It is officially bilingual. It is within Flanders. It's surrounded by Dutch-speaking Flanders, and yet the vast majority of people in Brussels speak French. So it's a sort of microcosm of the whole problem. And an analogy often used when talking about Brussels is that Flemings and Walloons are kind of like they're in a marriage that has been difficult and painful, but they stay together for the sake of the child, and the child is Brussels. Brussels is so important that it's been very hard for the two to break up because no one knows exactly what to do with this important city right in the middle.
It's almost like what happened with Berlin when Germany was divided.
Sure, but some people are talking about if Belgium were split up into a Flanders and a Wallonia, that Brussels could become something like a special international city where the EU would be based and NATO would remain, and it doesn't have to go with one side or the other because neither would be willing to give it up completely to the other.
Has Belgium's months of having no government had an impact on the operations of the EU or of NATO?
Not really, no. That city is a city of journalists and diplomats who go about their things and go about their business and don't pay too much attention to Belgium as a country and as a political atmosphere.
Are French Walloons able to spot Flemish people simply by looking at them or vice versa?
I don't know about looking, but as soon as anyone opens their mouth, you can tell who's who because most Dutch people, of course, everyone learning a foreign language in their adolescence or adulthood will immediately identify themselves with an accent. And here's another part of the problem. All of the Dutch speakers learn French because it's important and it's a useful international language, but very few French people will actually take the time to learn Dutch. They'd rather learn English because it's much more useful for them. And so the prime minister is almost always a Dutch speaker because they need someone who is fluent in both languages, and so few French-speaking politicians take the time to learn Dutch.
Well, you would think they would see it in their best interest to do it simply because they're the ones who are going to wind up losing the most, aren't they, if the country splits up?
Well, the French-speaking region, it said if the country breaks up, it would be harder for the Dutch-speaking part to join the Netherlands just to the north, but that it's not out of the realm of possibility that the French-speaking part might join France, since the Walloons have always kind of looked up to France as the big cousin right next door there.
Is there a lot of immigration in Belgium?
There is, and in fact, it's become a big salient issue. And immigration has fed two of the nationalist parties that I mentioned earlier. There's a Front National on the French-speaking side, and there's a group called the Vlaams Belang on the Dutch-speaking side, both of which clamor for autonomy in their own regions from the other side, but both of which have also made a very overt appeal against immigration. And the Vlaams Belang, in particular, is seen by outsiders as a highly racist and xenophobic party. So
the immigration is mostly from the Middle East and
there
from
is a
North
lot of
Africa?
North Africa and the Middle East and Turkey, yes.
So it's the same sort of thing that we're seeing in other parts of Europe.
You see,
people are brought
of...
in to do the work, and at the same time, there are problems. And of course, we see the situation in France, where unemployment is rampant among the immigrant groups.
Yes, and of course, a lot of these economies in Europe are growing slowly, and particularly have high levels of unemployment. And so, it's always the immigrants that get the greatest share of the blame. And then in Belgium, of course, you have the additional aspect of both sides, the Flemings and the Walloons, blaming each other for various problems as well.
Has there been an increase in ethnic group individualization in recent years?
I'd say it's been a trend for quite a long time. Belgium is a highly federal state, which means that a lot of the powers of the government have been devolved to the regions. So Wallonia and Flanders have control over education, tax policy, quite a large number of affairs that they control themselves. And the trend is for further devolution of powers from Brussels and from the center to these regional governments. And that's why they haven't been able to form a government, because the Flemings want even more power given to Flanders and taken away from Belgium as a whole.
Well, what about the current governmental impasse? Has this exacerbated these divisions?
It certainly has. You're starting to see more resigned sighs and more people taking the possibility of a breakup seriously. At the end of last year, famously, a satirical TV show broadcast an announcement that Belgium had been broken up and Flanders had declared independence and the king had fled. And a lot of people took this seriously.
This is a War of the Worlds kind of thing.
Exactly. And 30 years ago, this would have been a lot less likely, but we're definitely seeing a trend towards greater polarization between the two sides.
Well, what did the polls say? Do they say that people would actually like to see a split in the country?
More so in the Flemish side. Like I say, it's richer, and they feel like they're sort of supporting, through transfer payments, they're supporting a poorer half down in the south. And so about half of Flemings are saying they'd like to see a breakup, and about 60-something percent say that they think that in the long term it's inevitable.
Although last week, tens of thousands of Belgians held a rally to preserve the United States.
Well, that may be so, but I would guess that the largest number of them would have been French speakers, who are the ones clamoring to keep the thing together more because, like I say, they do get more from the richer Belgium, the richer Dutch-speaking north.
Has King Albert taken a position on this?
Well, of course, being the king of Belgium, he doesn't want to be the king of Brussels. So, of course, his position is for keeping things together. But I doubt his influence alone would be decisive in this.
And if new elections were held, which is what usually happens with this kind of impasse, do you think that anything will be resolved, or are we just going to see a continuation of this polarization?
It depends on how the atmosphere develops, because if people remain calm and they decide to have new elections to give more power to the responsible parties of the center, sure. But if it gets more acrimonious, and it might, there's been some discussions this week that have made this Flemish nationalist party rather angry. If things continue to get more acrimonious, then a new election might feed the more recalcitrant, the more angry parties, and might actually hasten this breakup that some people are speculating about.
Have the French and Dutch governments commented on the situation?
They are largely removed from the situation because they have bigger fish to fry. But, of course, mostly the Europeans will say they support a united Belgium. Nobody wants to go on the record from another country and say they support splitting your country up. So,
well, Belgium also sees itself as inexplicably tied with the EU. They just lost a case in which they went after a journalist who had exposed an EU scandal. And the Belgian government was the government that pursued this journalist, not the EU.
Yeah, Belgium is very important to the EU, not only as the seat of most of the EU institutions there in Brussels, but it's a small country. It's divided amongst itself. And so in a way, Belgium, which is highly federal and very multi-ethnic, kind of looks like the EU in miniature. So the Belgians tend to support the EU a great deal because being integrated into a union that includes France and Germany and now Poland and Finland and Slovakia and Slovenia makes the tensions within Belgium seem a little less extreme and a little less unusual.
We have just 30 seconds. Do you think that it's going to split up?
You know, if I had to place my own money on a bet, I would say not soon, but in 5 years, 10 years, I think it gets closer to even odds.
Really? This is in one of the more established states of Europe. That's kind of shocking.
Well, you hear it from Belgians. They say that they don't think it's entirely out of the picture, and you hear it especially from the Flemings in the north, people who are closer to it.
Thank you so much for talking with us. I've been talking with Lane Green, who writes for The Economist magazine and who has been in Belgium watching all of this occur.
I was around just after the election this year.
Uh-huh. And It's kind of stunning to me still to hear predictions that a European country could split apart. What next? Alsace-Lorraine, I guess, leaves France. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Leonard.